It had often been suggested that Goliath's bridge had been copied from the Starship Enterprise. After a century and a half, Star Trek was still affectionately revived from time to time. It was a reminder of the naive dawn of the space age, when men dreamed it might be possible to defy the laws of physics and race across the universe more swiftly than light itself. But no way of avoiding the speed limit set by Einstein had been discovered. And although wormholes in space had been proved to exist, nothing even as large as an atomic nucleus could pass through them. Yet despite this, the dream of really conquering the interstellar gulfs had not wholly died. Kali filled the main view screen. No magnification was needed, for Goliath was hovering only 200 meters above its ancient, battered surface. And now, for the first time in its existence, it had visitors. Though it was a commander's privilege to take the first step on a virgin world, Captain Singh had delegated the landing to 3 crew members more experienced in extravehicular activities. He was anxious not to waste any time. Most of the human race was watching, and waiting for the verdict that would decide the fate of the Earth. It's impossible to walk on the smaller asteroids. Gravity is so feeble that a careless explorer can easily achieve escape velocity and go heading off on an independent orbit. One member of the contact team was therefore wearing a self-propelled hard suit fitted with external grasping arms. The other two rode on a small space sled that could easily have been mistaken for one of its Arctic analogs. Captain Singh and the dozen officers gathered around him on Goliath's bridge knew better than to bother the EVA team with unnecessary questions or advice unless some emergency arose. The sled had now touched down on the summit of a large boulder several times its own size, blasting away a surprisingly impressive cloud of dust as it did so. "Touchdown, Goliath. Can see the bare rock now. Shall we anchor?" "Looks as good a place as any. Go ahead." "Deploying drill. Seems to be going in easily. Won't it be great if we strike oil?" There were a few low groans on the bridge. Such feeble jokes served to relieve tension, and Singh encouraged them. Ever since rendezvous, there had been a subtle change in the crew's morale, with unpredictable swings between gloom and juvenile humor. Whistling past the graveyard, as the ship's physician had privately labeled it. She had already prescribed tranquilizers for one mild case of manic depressive symptoms. It would grow steadily worse in the weeks and months ahead.
"Erecting the antenna. Deploying the radio beacon. How are the signals?"
"Loud and clear."
"Good. Now Kali won't be able to hide."
Not, of course, that there was the slightest danger of losing Kali, as had happened many times in the past with asteroids that had been poorly observed. No orbit had ever been computed with greater care, but some uncertainty still existed. There was still a slim chance that the hammer of God might miss the anvil. Now the giant radio telescopes on Earth and lunar farside were waiting to receive the pulses from the beacon, timed to a thousandth of a millionth of a millionth of a second. It would be more than 20 minutes before they reached their destination, creating an invisible measuring rod that would define Kali's orbit to within a matter of centimeters. A few seconds later, the space guard computers would give their verdict of life or death. But it would be almost an hour before the word got back to Goliath. The first waiting period had begun.